You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on
it. How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McCall. Well, it's been a very interesting week, to say the least, in the IT world. Firstly, Microsoft pulled their Jerry Seinfeld TV campaign. You remember the one we tried to work out last week where Jerry asked Bill to give him a sign by adjusting his shorts in the car park of the local supermarket? Well, it seems that we weren't the only ones who didn't quite get it. This week, Microsoft is back with its Life Without Walls, a new campaign which is more mainstream. In fact, so much so, I'd say the entire population will get the message that Microsoft is giving Apple the bird. I'm a PC, which is the opening line of the Mac campaign, also opens Microsoft's ad. But there's no sign of the jean-wearing, stereotypical graphic designer Mac user anywhere. Secondly this week, the rumours and scuttlebutt about Google taking their servers into international waters and powering them with wave energy abounds yet again. The search engine juggernaut recently applied for a patent in the United States to protect their unique system for generating electricity from waves. While chatting offline to Tech Talk's US correspondent Lydia Davis, her opening remarks were something along the lines of, "Have you heard what Google are up to now?" Each week, Google seems to make the news for one reason or another, sometimes fanciful and other times practical. One thing's for sure, whatever they do, it'll make the news. And finally this week, a disgruntled Australian consumer has thrown it back in the face of a white goods retailer by placing her purchase of a mobile communications device on eBay after the retailer refused to refund her money after she found lurid pictures on the device she bought. Compromising pictures of a female employee of the store was apparently not enough to warrant a refund. From the sublime to the ridiculous, we've got it all this week as IT goes tabloid.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Qantas says no to high-altitude broadband. Telstra announces prepaid wireless broadband. Microsoft unveils BlueTrack. And Adam Turner has a look at DVD recorders. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, FBI and Secret Service investigate Palin email breach. Hewlett-Packard set to axe 25,000 jobs worldwide. Microsoft and Pioneer join forces in the digital motor car. Australia scrutinises digital television changeover in the United States. And Dick Smith Electronics on the back foot over mobile pornography. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Both the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Secret Service have commenced independent investigations into the hacking of Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin's email account last week. David Kernell, son of a US state politician, is reportedly being investigated after the hacking of a Yahoo Mail account and sharing its contents on the internet. The Associated Press last week reported that details had emerged about how Sarah Palin's email account had been broken into, including a hacker's claim he was able to impersonate Palin online to obtain her password. Yahoo declined to comment on details of the investigation, citing Palin's privacy and the sensitivity of the inquiry. The break-in of Palin's private account is especially significant because Palin sometimes uses non-government emails to conduct state business. Previously disclosed emails indicate her administration embraced Yahoo accounts as an alternative to government email. Government emails could possibly be released to the public under Alaska's Open Records Act. Details of this week's break-in, if authentic, were consistent with speculation by computer security experts who said Yahoo's Forgot My Password service was almost certainly exploited. The McCain campaign issued a statement which described the incident as an invasion of Palin's privacy. US technology giant Hewlett-Packard said last week it would cut nearly 25,000 jobs worldwide over the next 3 years as part of its integration with computer services firm EDS. HP bought EDS in August as part of a $13.9 billion deal aimed at creating a global powerhouse in computer services to compete against IBM. According to a statement released by HP, the redundancies are intended to streamline the combined company's services businesses, and once complete, is expected to result in annual cost savings of approximately $1.8 billion. According to HP, about 7.5% of the combined workforce would be affected, with about half of the job cuts taking place in the United States. Microsoft and Pioneer last week announced the signing of a patent cross-licensing agreement, allowing each company to develop the other's product lines. The agreement covers a broad range of consumer products, including Pioneer's car navigation products and televisions, and Microsoft's software products. Microsoft said that it had entered into similar patent cross-licensing agreements with Kenwood and Alpine Electronics for GPS navigation products, and already had a number of Windows automotive technologies for in-car navigation and digital entertainment. Locally, Microsoft and Pioneer would not comment on the agreement, only noting that this was the 15th Japanese company with which Microsoft had signed such a deal. The Australian Federal Government Digital Switchover Task Force, responsible for the switch-off of analogue television by 2013, is watching recent tests in the state of Washington, where analogue TV has now been decommissioned. According to Twice magazine, a consumer electronics publication in the United States, officials in Washington state received 797 calls of complaint on the first day the analog transmissions were ceased, but only 23 of those said they were unaware of the transition or got the date mixed up. A majority of the calls were related to people who had waited until the last minute to hook up their digital set-top boxes and they needed assistance. Some viewers, however, lost access to channels because the digital signal was not as strong as the analog. In Australia, difficulties of this kind could result in additional transmission towers needing to be built. In the United Kingdom, the digital changeover has already started and is expected to be complete by 2012. Incentives for viewers to switch early include a range of new free-to-air channels, including BBC Three, ITV2, E4, Sky News and Film4. And Dick Smith Electronics is investigating a report of a customer discovering pornographic images on a new mobile phone. The former display handset allegedly contained 49 images, many of which were pornographic, and may have even featured a staff member from a store. A Dick Smith spokesman said the company was investigating the allegation and that it was likely the customer would be given a full refund. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
An ad for Vodafone got banned because the disclaimer at the end of the ad was read too fast.
This email made me cry.
Want Linux under Windows?
No, I don't want Linux under Windows. What's the point of that?
Well, that's handy.
Very handy.
So you can watch it either landscape or portrait, whichever way you want.
I've actually jailbroken my phone finally. That was one of the things I've done while I've been away.
What do you think of the Mac Mini? Is it the Mac that time forgot?
Come on, Dr. Ron, you're an adult. Grow up. Just scan it off or you're going to have to pay.
The Australian broadband is rubbish. Well, yeah, see, we don't need...
That's no, what the rest of the world is
saying.
No, I really
appreciate your value.
Every year, every airline in the world has thousands of incidents that occur.
Well, it's like that cockpit face suckers.
Exactly.
Get out of here.
No, I'm serious because it's got to get on quickly. Because
fast broadband at last.
So I've just got an Elgato machine today, in fact, in the mail.
The cost, he believes, was a major drawback.
So there you go, a little bit of a tip.
It is like a church.
It is, isn't it?
It's a religion.
It is.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
A very good evening, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm the croaky host this evening, Andrew McComb.
I've got a radio voice, apparently, from what I've been told tonight, so enjoy. Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan join me this evening. Evening, lads.
Hello there, hello there. Say, call me now.
Call me now, 0500.
I'm still waiting.
Oh, absolutely. Are you?
You are a bit croaky tonight.
Yeah, if I get a bit hoarse, just you'll know why.
I'm feeling a little hoarse.
I'm not, actually, but you...
Sorry.
Yeah, good. Fine form tonight, Dr. Ron. No. Dr. Graham, how are you this evening?
Not too bad, Andrew. How are you?
Oh, look, you know, no one listens anyway.
I wasn't listening, was I?
Absolutely. And JD...
He's also under the weather.
He's under the weather, so much so that he's put in an apology this evening. So we have to forge on without him so we can talk about Apple and things like that, and he'll be laying there in bed or watching television
the Apple
or doing whatever it is like that.
Religion, as we heard at the start.
Religion, is it? What's
the
it called?
Apple religion.
Oh.
Yes.
Anyway, come and join us on the chat. We're here, we're there, we're everywhere. chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you have a question for us while we're live on the panel, or you want to just come and join the group. Let's see what the boys chat about tonight. So everyone's welcome, come along. It was good last week. We had Mark Mayer on the radio. He was talking about Qantas and aviation in general. I learned a lot.
It was great having Mark on the program. We haven't had him on the program for ages.
No.
So we'll have to get him back a little bit more regularly.
It's a pity he wasn't here this week, because once again the A380 has arrived in town, or is arriving in town this week in Sydney and Melbourne, because they had their airport runways modified just for the privilege of this huge, gigantic aircraft to land on deck. And guess what? They've, you know, budgetary constraints with Qantas these days. Guess what they had to pull out of it?
What did they have to pull out?
Broadband.
Out of the A380?
Yeah, no mobile broadband if you're going to be flying high. We'll talk about that later,
oh,
too.
Oh, that sucks.
It does.
Yeah. Now, with the runways, they had to not only lengthen them, but widen them as well.
Why widen? Their wingtips would just do, like they clip a tower or something as they come down to land, didn't they?
I guess there has to be a certain margin of error, a certain width based on the dimensions of the largest plane that's going to be using the runway.
I find it amazing that they actually get off the ground. That thing, I don't know, what's it weight?
I don't know.
With wingtips, like Dr.
Imagine.
Ron's talking about, like if they had to widen it.
Yeah, yeah.
And like it's, phew. Anyway. Well, lots to talk about. But anyway, it's good to see that Qantas are actually upping their old-aged fleet, because that was what Mark was talking about last week too, that a lot of perceptions out there that the fleet's getting a tad old. I think, what, they've got a dozen or so of these coming at the great expense of huge amounts of money to buy aircraft like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, aircraft can fly for many, many years, as long as the aircrafts are maintained properly. I don't think there's a great cause for concern. And speaking to Mark off air as well last week, I don't think it's unusual for a lot of aircraft to be 10, 15, even 20 years old, provided that it's maintained and it's in good working condition. And it's not a cause for concern. It's quite common in the airline industry, from what I understand.
Not too many cars on the road that are that age, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, no, there aren't.
Rust buckets.
There aren't.
People would maintain, they just churn them over, but then again, they don't cost.
And I've got the answer to your question, by the way. Maximum takeoff weight, complete with payload and fuel and the whole shebang, is well over 500,000 kilograms.
Well over 500 tons.
Yep. Is that what it is? 500 ton.
Isn't that ton. Huge?
That's amazing.
Yeah, metric ton, yeah.
And those engines, imagine the engines that need to... Oh. That's a lot
it's
of
all price. Aerodynamics, though, isn't it? That's what makes it work.
That's it, yeah. Very clever shaped wings, I believe. Wing area, 845 square metres.
No wonder they need a bit of extra space.
Isn't that massive?
Anyway, all right, well, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Graham Kelly, Andrew McComb in this evening. Come and have a chat to us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. A couple of interesting things that haven't made it on the rundown, boys, but nonetheless, we can talk about them anyway. The iPhone, the 32 gig version, is on the way. A pity that JD isn't here to talk about that, but
what's the largest one at the moment?
16
gig,
yeah.
I think. Yeah,
yeah, and the 8 was the original, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Apple insiders are suggesting that the long-awaited iPhone 3G 32 gig of storage could soon be making an appearance due to apparent shortages of the 8 gigabyte... See, I told you I couldn't talk tonight.
Speak in English.
Yes, exactly, or something that makes sense. Anyway, the shortages of the 8 gig model, while in-home activation could also make an appearance again, because what they did with this one is they had to make a queue up in the shop and it had to be activated in the store.
And everybody activated at exactly the same time. And
iTunes fell over and everything else fell over.
Turns out to be a bad idea to make everybody do everything all at the same time on the internet. Never goes well.
Yeah, don't launch any other applications like MobileMe at the same time.
No.
How's your control panel, just speaking of MobileMe? Yeah. Been going around, and bonjour, I've walked past my Well, see, I do television and I need QuickTime, and unfortunately that's a byproduct of QuickTime is that Apple try and throw everything else at you. So walking past
well,
the machines today.
So I need iTunes, and yeah, therefore yeah. I get all the others as well.
And I was sitting there today, and of course the Mac guru's in the office, and I've got a story about Mac for a short. Remember the Paris in our office has had no end of problems with his Mac.
Yeah.
Well, he finally reached a settlement. They gave him a check, so he's going off to buy a PC.
Oh, good.
Really? So this is in lieu of getting his faulty machine returned to him in working order.
Gosh, we get distracted. I haven't finished the iPhone bit, and we've moved on already.
That's interesting. So Apple have actually sent him a check and said, sorry, no hard feelings, here you go.
Yeah, but the problem was that it was a $4,000 laptop, and he's only got a $3,000 check. So there's $1,000 gone wayward there for a device which he hasn't had for probably the best part of 6 months under warranty.
That doesn't add up.
No, it doesn't add up. So I don't know what the deal is there, but it was an extended warranty issue that the claim sort of fell under. And, of course, like anything where you've got two parties involved, a manufacturer and a third party who's chosen to offer this service, then there's a lot of finger-pointing and duck-shoving, and it's their fault. It's their looking after it.
So the laptop wasn't entirely new when it failed?
Oh, it was still under the major manufacturer, under the Apple warranty, less than 12 months old warranty when it failed. And then whilst it was away, because it's been away for 6 months, the Apple warranty finished and the extended warranty kicked in. A third-party application kicked in. Buyers, beware. I will actually have a chat to him on the radio. I'll take the thing in and we'll have a chat and he can tell his story. Because it is very interesting. He's had to jump through hoops and over hurdles and listen to a complete range of fabricated rubbish from service agents.
I would have thought that if the fault actually kicked in while it was within warranty, it wouldn't matter how long the manufacturer had it once it had been returned. You're saying that the warranty ran out while it was still being looked at or repaired.
Yes, that's correct, but the problem was it came back. When I say it came back to a point where it could be checked out and the fault was still there and it had to be resubmitted for the same fault. Allegedly, it had been fixed.
Ooh.
And this is by a Mac service agent who... well, once again, I shouldn't say anything because I'm not 100% sure on my facts at the moment. I'll get Paris to tell us the story, but it does make for very interesting reading.
Good one. Back to the rundown.
I haven't got back to the rundown. We're back to the 32 gig iPhone
way. Yep.
Rumors here also that the latest from the Apple insiders that the 3G iPhone could soon be getting a 2 and a B to become an iPhone 32 GB. So they're actually going to rebrand it differently too. iPhone fans were shocked when Apple CEO Steve Jobs failed to bring in the iPhone 3G with the 32 gig storage to life on June the 9th. So when they have their, because they have their little conventions and powwows and stuff like that. So
even 32 gig isn't a lot if you're using it as your media player as well as your phone, is it? That's not going to hold a huge number of podcasts.
When you think you can get a 64 gig Sony stick to whack into the side of your little DV camera, and that's nothing in this day and age, you know. It is. It's not.
And particularly, you know, you've got this big screen on the device. You're likely to want to subscribe to the odd video podcast as well.
Well, once again, it's a pity JD's not here, but I just find it amazing that they force you to download stuff through the, you know, you can't get at it. Well, jailbreak. He's jailbreaked his. But anyway, we'll see what they all say.
Would that have a little hard disk in it, 32 gigabytes?
Wouldn't think so. I think they'd do that in solid state memory.
Solid state these days?
Speaking of solid state, you might be able to, this is completely off the cuff, Graham, so the actual solid state hard drives are really starting to come of their own at the moment.
They are, yes.
What do you reckon of them? Are we playing with fire? A solid state hard drive? Nothing sort of latent or anything like that?
Well, all hard drives are prone to various failures. I think the solid state hard drives are probably prone to a different type of failure, but I mean, mechanical hard drives, particularly if you're carrying them around using them in portable devices, you know, portable music players that are hard drive based, like my iPhone is, then, you know, they're, you know, likely to be quite vulnerable as well. You'd certainly want to be backing everything up that you're carrying on them. The solid state ones, vulnerable to, more vulnerable, you'd think, to electrostatic discharge and just random transistor failure. But, I don't see there's any more or less than a traditional hard drive.
How green would they be compared to the old one? Are they a bit more, because I haven't seen them yet. I've just read a lot about them, but I haven't seen them. Are they user-friendly greenness?
You'd imagine they'd be a lot less power hungry, because if you think about it, it takes a lot of energy to spin.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Spin a motor, and stepper motors that have to be very accurate tend to suck a lot of power that move the heads on the hard disks.
If you ever pulled a hard drive out of a server, it can burn your fingers.
Oh yeah, they'd certainly use a lot of power.
So with that sort of, you know, clunky old mechanicalism gone, maybe the reliability could be a bit more...
Yeah, and I think as with everything, the first generation might have a few reliability problems, and as the market sort of builds even further, that the brands that you trust will learn to improve the reliability, and yeah, things will
just a new way of thinking, really, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Oh well, you'll have to buy one and try one out. I wonder how the pricing will be compared to the existing drives too. Well, this and more, I guess, as they come onto the market.
To do anything in the PC market, it would have to be absolutely competitive. There's no room to move in pricing in the PC market.
Mm-hmm. All right, if you live in Silicon Valley, as we know, someone near and dear to the Tech Talk radio show does, unemployment rate in Silicon Valley is at its worst ever and rising, apparently.
Not good news.
A steadily climbing unemployment rate has reached a shocking four-year high of 6.6%. Recent statistics indicate that the percentage of unemployed workers in the sunny state of California has increased to 7.7 in August, up from 7.4 in July. So I wonder if this has got something to do with the current economic state of the country and whether people are getting nervous and not putting people on, or whether it's something completely different, as in related to technology and the supply and demand issues of staff.
Well, I guess that would depend on what demographic of people are in that unemployed bracket, whether it's the highly qualified Google type tech heads, or whether it's the lower end of the market that are doing the support for these sorts of large companies. The
support's always been fairly big and ongoing, especially with the large incumbents like Microsoft and that. Mm. I would imagine their support network would be huge, but obviously I don't think Microsoft are based in California. They're a bit further.
Up the hill
Redmond. A bit. Yeah. So anyway, don't go to Silicon Valley, I guess, at the moment if you're looking for a job.
They're not hiring, yes.
No, exactly. You'd have to have a good wicket. Obviously, Bill's finding it hard. He's doing TV ads, and we'll talk about that again in a sec too. Another interesting thing, which is also not quite on our rundown at the moment, I found this in the mainstream press today too. The ACCC, Australia's consumer watchdog, is putting websites through the truth test. Now, when I heard about this, I thought, oh, yeah, here we go. That's great. How are you going to do that? And then I thought, well, no, hang on a sec. It's probably not a bad idea, especially for the websites which are reputable, as in allegedly a source of information. You can't stretch the truth. But then again, I thought, well, how are you going to police something like this? Anyway, IT News reports that the Australian Consumer and Competition Commission has sent out a warning to websites. Now, that's a very loose word, websites. We didn't get one, Tech Talk Radio. So does that mean we can stretch the truth? Anyway, they sent out a warning to websites as they will be busted for providing false information. Now, there's another interesting word, busted. What does that mean? Fine, taken down, someone's going to access your DNS settings and take you offline? According to the ACCC, in the next 24 hours, thousands of websites will be examined by consumer protection agencies worldwide with just one question in mind. How much balderdash is there on your website?
Does it say balderdash? Does it say something totally different?
No, it says, is the message true or false? Which, in effect, is my words, just embellishing that statement a little bit. What do you reckon about that? Like, I know in television you can't say a claim or you can't make an accusation or anything like that without substantiation. That's television advertising. I'm talking about radio. Radio doesn't have that standard.
Well, the internet's always been a bit of a free-for-all. And I think if you're offering products or services on a website, then if someone engaged you to provide those products or those services and they paid you and you couldn't actually come up with the goods, then they'd have grounds to take civil action against you. But it's interesting that the ACCC.
Yeah, the consumer law.
In this instance, they're trying to be a bit proactive by the sounds of things.
I think so. I guess you can go to a website doing research on a good or service that you may be looking to buy, and if they say something on a website and you're delivered something else, I guess that's misleading, which is what the ACCC stands about. It's like a television ad. You know, if I say I'm 100% Australian owned and I have, you know, 4 out of 5 people use this product, I have to be able to prove that.
It sounds a bit airy-fairy, though. It just raises a lot of questions that...
More questions than it answers, really.
It really does. They're going to target sites that are aimed at Australian consumers. Are they going to target sites
They'd have to aim for sites that have an Australian connection, because they have to have someone to attack. Yeah. Or they're going to have to either attack the host if the host is in Australia, or you have to attack the company that the advertising is promoting
if they're in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they're not either, then good luck, I suppose.
There wouldn't be a lot that you could do. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, even if you're a company based in Australia and you put a website up overseas, you could still get a a notice and possibly a fine. I don't know what the legislation is. As Andrew said, with television, it's done by an industry body, and it's somewhat voluntary.
Free TV Australia.
Free TV Australia, that's right. Whereas we're talking about the more general consumer protection laws, the statutory laws that protect other forms of media, such as websites and radio.
Well,
and so
if you look at print advertising, terms and conditions need to be put onto an ad in print.
Yeah.
It's not legally forcible, but if you mislead the consumer, then the consumer has some form of recourse if it's not right. So potentially they're going to go down that sort of line as well.
Yeah, so the question is how much teeth does the that's horrible grammar, but how many teeth does the legislation have?
Yes, have they got a good bite?
Yes.
And can anything be done unless somebody makes a complaint? Because you could say anything you liked on a website, and you could offer to do anything for any price or provide anything in any circumstance, but until someone actually complained, if you didn't provide goods or a service, then I don't know they could actually do anything.
And then you could ask the next question. Are Australians a bunch of complainers? Have you complained about anything lately? Does something get your goat and you get in and you write a nasty email or you?
Yeah, the immediate response is yes, it does. But I just can't think off the top of my head what I've got to answer you about recently. But yes, it does.
How's your baggage? Did you get all back, by the way?
Yeah, we got all around the world trip. That seems like an obvious thing. Doesn't
I know,
it?
I was just wondering if you've put a volley in there and saying, how dare you lose my bags? And
not yet. I've
what's all this white stuff doing in my bag? It's been to Calcutta or something? Or?
That's right. It's full of sand or something. I've left the wife to follow that one up, and she was quite relieved to actually get the bag back, even though it was damaged, but it had all the contents intact. We'll follow up maybe down the track. Yeah. But I don't know. Is Australia full of whingers, is what you're saying?
I don't know. It's an interesting question, isn't it? Mm. One other interesting thing that's occurred which I've had personal experience with in the last week or so, is inbound telemarketing calls.
Right.
And I don't mean, someone ring up saying, hi, I'd like to sell you this. Are you interested? We're not trying to sell, all that sort of stuff. I'm talking about institutions which are allegedly trustworthy. And I'll name names. I had a phone call from the National Australia Bank.
Yep.
And I had a phone call from Telstra in relation to...
In this last week or so?
In this last week.
Yeah. Yep.
In relation to goods and services that I was either dealing with or...
Are you a customer?
A customer of these companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the initial conversation, and you entertain it for a while, and then they start to ask you to identify yourself.
Mm.
And I find that is where, if there's someone out there that's phishing, this is what they're doing, I don't know that it's Telstra, really. It comes up and says private on my mobile when they call me.
And you'd probably think that 9 out of 10 or 99 out of 100 people in Australia would be a Telstra customer.
Exactly. And also, from a banking point of view, the National Australia Bank was ringing me up in relation to one of the products that they have, asking me if I wanted to modify. And I've gone, that sounds pretty interesting. So, can I just confirm your date of birth? And I said, no.
I'd be saying no.
No, you may not. You rang me and, I don't know that you aren't some person that's trying to skim. But the thing
And what was their reaction?
They said, but we can't continue if you can't identify yourself. And I said,
that's not good.
I'm saying, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And that's exactly right, Graham. Yeah. That is not good. Because I would expect if an organisation such as Telstra or National Australia Bank rang me and wanted to talk to me about my finances,
that they would have the processes in place to be able to accurately establish your identity.
Without giving, what's your date of birth?
That's right. And without giving up.
Now, this has happened a couple of times to me, and both times was from the same organisation. It was from Telstra. And the first time, they said, obviously you don't want to sort this out. Your phone's going to get disconnected, but I can't do anything about it.
Oh, they threatened you, did they?
Yeah.
Nice.
And that was as far as we could go. The second time it happened to me, I said the same thing. Look, I'm not going to tell you that because you rang me and I don't know who you are. And they said, that's fine. Here's a reference number. Ring the number on the top of your bill and quote the reference number and you'll go straight through.
Well, that's good. There's a solution to the issue.
Yeah. They've improved, which is major points.
Well, they haven't improved in the last week with me, let me tell you.
Same department, Graham, or unrelated inquiries?
Both would have been to do with mobiles, yeah.
So maybe they have introduced a system there, so slowly, not in Andrew's experience, but slowly with your experience.
Maybe it depends on the call centre you get to or the level of training of the operator you get. It might be a little bit variable across the system.
In this day of identity theft, it's most important that you do guard your personal information, especially
Absolutely.
Date of birth.
Yeah.
You've got to keep those cards very close to your chest. Like, I know, Dr. Ron, you have a shredder at home.
I do. It was a gadget of the week many years ago. And everyone should have a shredder.
Absolutely.
Stick it in the kitchen there beside the rubbish bin if you're going to be throwing away paper. Even if it's just advertising material, if it's got your name and your address on it, just rip that bit of paper off the magazine or whatever it is, just drop it in the shredder and chuck the rest of it in the bin or the recycling tub or whatever it is you do. But you don't want that sort of stuff just floating around out there. Because if someone's got your name and they've got your address, they're two very critical pieces of information that they need if they're going to be using your personal information maliciously.
You can even get shredders now, and they're quite popular, that can take CD media, that can take credit cards.
There you go. I've got one that does that.
Yeah.
So you still can't take a staple, though.
Yeah, if you
a staple will get them every time.
Some of them, yeah. But if you think about it, you know, how often do you write some data to a CD-ROM and the write fails and you just throw it in the bin? But with data recovery software, you might be able to recover a lot of that data off that disk.
Absolutely,
far better to shred it.
I was mortified when my accountant...
Far more fun to put in the microwave, but far better to shred it.
Really?
Put in the microwave? You put a CD in the microwave?
I do not recommend trying this, but it's a lot of fun.
Is it on YouTube?
It probably is.
Please don't try this at home, ladies and gentlemen. But now you've got me intrigued. What happens? Does it spark and arc and melt?
Yeah, very intricate light show in the disc, because the metallic surface vaporizes in an interesting pattern.
Was it an audio CD or a data CD?
I think it was, I don't know, it was probably some free offer that came with some machine I bought or something. It was one of those sorts of discs.
So if you could hear if it was an audio CD, you might be able to put your ear up next to the microwave while it's happening. You might be able to hear
that. No, I wouldn't think so.
My accountant sent me some tax return information in the mail, and I was mortified to find when I opened that it had not only my name and my address, but my date of birth and my tax file number and my bank account numbers and all this other information. I thought if this had become lost in the mail, or if someone had helped themselves to my mail in the letterbox, then they've got more than enough to actually meet it, like what we call a 100-point ID check in Australia. It's probably similar in other countries as well.
Yeah.
And somebody could represent themselves as me if they were wanting to open a bank account or open an account for a post office box or anything. So just be very careful of your personal information.
I think it's just a timely warning to anyone else out there, including the older generation who probably aren't as familiar with identity theft if they're not active on the internet.
Don't think about those things.
Yeah, they don't actually. And you know, I think, oh, this person on the phone sounds really nice. I'll give them a bit more information. Well, please stop.
You used to be able to trust people like that, didn't you?
Well, before this internet thingy came along, yeah, you sort of could. But now, anyway, don't start me. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan and myself, Andrew McComb, Tad Croakey this evening. But bear with us. Come and have a chat to us on the chat. I think Drew's out there. He's going to be to put a CD in his microwave or something. I think there's something, lightning CD. Yeah.
Please don't. I'm not recommending this to anybody.
And Chage is saying, if you microwave an audio CD, you hear the artists screaming in pain as they burn and vaporise. That's just the audio CD, I think.
Perfect for that Celine Dion disc that you've just been waiting to do something.
Poor Celine.
Go and try your partner's disc. Don't try it with one of yours, that's for sure. All right. We're going to take a break very shortly, but we should hit the rundown just briefly because we haven't even started on it yet.
Item number one. What are we talking about this weekend?
Nokia's free music phone starts, or sales are set to start on October the 17th. Now, you fell over backwards the other day when I told you I was interested in a Nokia handset.
That was
the other
a bit of a Twilight Zone episode. What was going on.
It was a bit freaky, but...
Free music phone, does that mean free music or free phone?
Nokia's first phone model with free access to music. Through the Nokia store.
Nice.
Is scheduled to go on sale on October the 17th in Britain. So who knows whether it'll come here. But Nokia's Comes With Music bundle of phone and music service could help the music industry make up for falling CD sales while challenging the dominance of Apple's iTunes in the digital music market. So this could be a bit of a push. Because when you think about it, if you're trying to sell a website which allows you to download music, you have to fight the incumbents. And the biggest one probably is...
iTunes would have the market well and truly cornered at the moment, wouldn't it?
So you do need a point of difference, which what I'm saying is you need a website which is different to iTunes ones. And obviously Nokia are going to go down the lines of, well, you buy one of our phones, you get free music. Now, I don't know whether there's any exclusions or anything like that. It says the package will differ from other bundles on the market as users can keep the music they have downloaded during the 12-month subscription period. So what it means is it sounds like it's a free-for-all. You buy your phone, you get 12 months on the Nokia music site, and off you go. Got to be good, I guess, especially for the youth of today who like all their music tracks.
And they'll suck you in as well, I suppose. They get you using the service for, it's a year, is that right? It's a year of unlimited...
Pretty much.
Unlimited access. And so once you start using it, it'll be fairly ingrained in the way that you downloaded music and got your music, and after that they could just start charging you for it.
A lot of things happen in technological years.
Yes.
You know?
You're also then becoming reliant on your Nokia device as your primary music player, I would imagine, as well. So you're going to keep using that, aren't you? If you've invested a year's worth of establishing a library on that device, you're going to keep using that.
Yes, that's...
Warlock on the chat saying Australia's first unlimited music download service will be launched today, letting mobile phone users download as many songs as they like. And apparently Vodafone are doing the same as well on called Music Station. See, come and register on the chat and see what's going on
yeah,
here.
Yeah, things actually, you learn.
Absolutely.
More than 1 million songs from all major record companies, says Warlock. Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. All right, let's just jump down to item 15 on the rundown. Because
that was a quick jump.
We'll just jump on those first one. Microsoft, we had the Bill Gates thing and the Jerry Seinfeld thing on last week, and we all sat here quite bemused going, what?
Yeah, now Jerry Seinfeld's been given the Kuiper pass, hasn't he?
And Bill's... That's showbiz.
Yeah. I watched one where they were living in a house or something now. They were with a family. Did you see that one?
Yeah, there was a second one there.
Yeah.
That was quite funny, but...
Almost made sense.
Almost made sense. It made a lot more sense than the first effort in the shoe store.
Yeah. Ultimately, it was just very weird and didn't really make me feel happy about Microsoft.
A lot of people paid a lot of money there for all the wrong reasons, but nonetheless...
You no longer feel happy about Microsoft, or you just... You still don't.
Well, it didn't improve my my opinion. That's possibly the best way to put it.
The new ad hit the... How would you say? The airwaves, the internet, absolutely everything that one
the
ad could hit.
Yes.
It hit that about two nights ago. And I was, I think, chatting to Lyd in California at the time when it was coming out. She said, oh, 6 o'clock our time, you can see it. Anyway, we logged in and we had a look. So if you want to go and have a look, lifewithoutwalls.com will redirect you to Microsoft's media page, and you can see these sites. But in a lot of respects, it starts off this time with the man who features in the Macintosh ads. You know,
yes.
I'm a Mac and I'm a PC, little man like that up the front.
Yep.
Anyway,
actually, I think it's just someone who looks like him.
Yeah, you're probably right. Paid a lot of money not to be there, so as a
result. I hear he is actually a Microsoft tech, though.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's a good rumour. That's a Graham rumour. Anyway, it's sort of, I'm not going to play it all, but it sounds a bit like this.
Hello, I'm a PC, and I've been made into a stereotype.
I'm a PC, and I'm not what you call hip.
I'm a PC, and I wear glasses.
I wear glasses.
Hey, I wear glasses.
I wear jeans.
And I study jeans.
And I design jeans.
And I design green buildings.
I'm a PC, and I study the law.
And I practice the law.
And I challenge the law.
I'm a PC, and I blog for Obama.
And I broadcast for McCain.
And I have a beard.
And that's where it goes downhill, really. The guy has a beard.
Right?
I'm a PC and I have three rings.
I'm a PC and I have one ring.
I turn number two into energy.
I'm a PC and I want to protect these.
I'm a PC and I'm connected to more than a billion others worldwide.
Roger that, Houston. I'm a PC.
And my name is Roger.
Anyway, so it goes on. And it's a montage of a lot of famous, infamous people, stereotypes as well, talking about the fact that they use PCs to connect to each other as opposed to being a trendy, jean-wearing...
Yes.
Graphic designer type sort of info stereotype sort of thing.
One of those PCs turned number two into energy.
Oh, you were listening.
Yes. I think another one of them turned number two into advertising. But
anyway, it seems to make a little bit more sense than the previous one where give me a sign, just adjust your undies in the car park. I think that one just got a bit away from us.
Very, very brave to tackle head on such a prominent and successful and very much loved campaign by Apple. Everybody enjoys those. PC users enjoy them just
even
as much
the PC
as Apple.
Users. We think they're great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, but I think we've got the right of reply. I think anyone who targets another company's market, then this is just what makes for entertaining advertising.
Yeah,
whether or not we believe it or not, we've got because in the advertising industry, you've got memorable ads and you've got hard sell. And memorable ads traditionally don't do hard sell. Yeah, that you don't have the two together, and the Apple ads are memorable. Do you reckon they sell computers?
Don't know.
Exactly.
I think they've lasted a long time if they don't.
Yeah, that's right. But it's very much a branding thing. What sells a computer is, you know, come down and spend $1,000 with us and we'll give you one of these.
Well, what sells Apple hardware is image. And what the advertising boosts is image. So, you know, maybe there's an indirect but strong effect there. But I still think, you know, there's right of reply and there's right of reply. And taking on something like that head on, you know, to start off a Microsoft ad with the words, I'm a PC, is very, very brave.
It's interesting because Microsoft don't own the PC. It's not the Microsoft PC like it is the Apple Mac.
No, it's not proprietary, is it?
Exactly. So they're...
Warlock's saying that Leo Laporte has been saying for ages that they need to tackle them head on. There you go. And that's what you do. If you just walk around the edges, they'll win.
Mm.
So, hey, we could go on about this for ages, but we need to take a break. We've got Adam Turner coming up after the break, and we'll go back and we'll randomly pick another element on our rundown, and we'll talk about that when we get back. Adam's going to be talking about DVD recorders
and
high-definition stuff.
Yeah. Like in the domestic environment, in the lounge room.
Yes, consumers, it's a confusing time, and manufacturers are throwing all sorts of strange things, but Adam's got a view from the couch. I'm not sure how windy it is this week. I think he's gone indoors because it's a bit, you know, cool in this part of the world where we come from. But hang around after the break and you'll hear that.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panellists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panellists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Come to the conclusion it's very hard typing and talking at the same time, so I've had to stop typing.
Couldn't you have had that break out a bit longer? That went
I'm sorry, Dr. Rumpa, thank you for the coffee. It's
you're
really
welcome.
Good.
rush.
Come and join us on the chat. That's where we've been chatting and typing. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We have it running every Monday night while we're live to air.
If you'd like to listen to us live, you're listening on the podcast now or on another one of Australia's fine community radio stations. We do actually stream live, and tonight we've got the Windows stream running and the Shoutcast stream running. So for more information...
So Shoutcast is for iTunes, is that right?
Or correct. Shoutcast, yeah, for iTunes or,
too,
yeah, or Winamp as
other
well.
MP3-style streamers.
That's it. Also...
Streamers, what have they got to do with it?
VLC, I think if you're running on on a Linux distribution or if you've just got good old-fashioned Windows Media Player, you can use the Windows stream. So there you go.
There you go.
It's good. We've got that out of the way. We are looking at a special streaming thing. No names, no pack drill, no promises. For our 200th show coming up shortly, so you'll
that's not far off either.
It's about 2 weeks away, I think, isn't it?
Far
imagine
out.
We've been doing it for 200 shows, 200 Monday nights.
That's so, a lot, isn't
does
it?
Does leave you speechless?
It does.
Obviously, got nothing better to do with our time. But anyway, no, we've got a great bunch of friends out there that keep us on board and chat to us and all that sort of stuff. Adam's one of our regulars.
He is. How is Adam going?
I think he's over his midlife crisis. I think Adam joined us about show 103 or something. I think, yeah. Well, no, was it before 100? I can't remember. Anyway, he's been with us for a while. We do the View from the Couch, which is a regular thing every night, where he has his, I guess it's a chance for Adam to actually stop putting things in writing and speak about it, because he writes for The Age and a lot of IT columns and things like that.
Specialising in the digital lounge room and home entertainment and that side of the technology world.
Yeah. Hey, I saw a really good remote control, which he probably would have liked the other day. I think it was a Bang & Olufsen one.
Oh, yeah.
It's about $1,000 for a remote control.
$1,000 for a remote control?
It was gold-plated, but whether it worked or not, I don't know. But it wouldn't last the test of time at our place with our kids.
No.
We go through remote controls at a ferocious rate.
You'd need to itemise it on your home contents insurance.
Yeah, and they'd laugh at you, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I would have thought so.
What's this remote control?
Remote control for your television, $1,000.
How many have you got? Have you got lots? One for your set top, one for your media station, one for your TV.
We've just got one, would you believe? And it's not a universal, it's just for the telly. But it actually controls the telly.
That explains why you're a thin and lanky sort of gentleman.
I'm always running, I'm always active, I have to get up out of the couch.
Your beloved says, Dr. Ron, can you change the channel for me, please?
Used to be like that, not all that long ago. Yes, dear. No, our remote control operates the television and the DVD player. But if we want to use the media center, I've got a wireless keyboard and mouse, but if I need to turn the volume up or down, I've got an old-fashioned stereo with a big volume knob on the front, and I have to get up out of the couch to
I think
turn
Adam's,
the volume up and down.
You don't often get those big volume knobs on the front anymore,
no,
do you?
No, you don't. No, I rather like my big volume knob.
Be nice to have.
Good. I'm glad we've clarified that. Adam Turner joined us from a hotel room in Sydney this evening. Stuck in a hotel room. Well, there you go. So he's listening to us on the stream. You never know if he's there. We might try and get him on or something down the track. Darren's joined us from the UK. He's probably just come up to throw more mud at our broadband over here in Australia, like he did last week.
Darren. Thanks, Darren. You're going to get banned in a minute.
So anyway, come along and join us. But anyway, Adam's view from the couch this week, all about DVDs and the current stuff that's available in the market. Yes, so enjoy. Come buy a DVD player.
A few years ago, I would have crawled across broken glass for an off-the-shelf hard drive combination DVD recorder with high-definition TV tuners. But now, it's just a stopgap solution. For a long time, cramming high-definition TV tuners into something that also had a DVD recorder was the holy grail of home entertainment, something which could only be attained by building a computer-based home entertainment system. Buying an off-the-shelf recorder meant choosing between watching high-definition or recording to DVD. Now, I certainly wouldn't inflict a computer-based media center on my non-tech-savvy friends and relatives. So when they would approach me for buying advice, I'd carefully explain that they needed to choose between high-definition and DVD recording. We go through the pros and cons of each so they didn't get any nasty surprises when they fired up their new recorder. More often than not, they'd opt for a standard def hard drive DVD recorder, such as Panasonic's DMR-EX75. As Australia's television network slowly ramped up their high-def content, I was worried they might be making the wrong decision, but at least they were making an informed decision. I'd come to the conclusion that we'd never see high-def tuners in an optical burner in the one consumer electronics device until Blu-ray recorders hit the market, which would be ridiculously expensive at first. So if you spent $600-ish on a standard def hard drive DVD recorder today, you'd get a few years out of it before you could replace it with a Blu-ray recorder for roughly the same price. The arrival of Panasonic's $2,200 Blu-ray recorder earlier this year seemed to confirm this, and the hefty price tag convinced me that I hadn't given people the wrong advice. Then Panasonic unveiled its $1,300 high-definition hard drive DVD recorder, with two HD tuners and a DVD burner under the bonnet. Where the hell was Panasonic a few years ago when we really needed something like this? Now that Blu-ray has won the format war, and Blu-ray recorders are hitting the shelf, a DVD recorder with high-definition tuners is a stopgap solution to tide you over while Blu-ray prices fall. In 12 months' time, you'll almost certainly be able to buy a Blu-ray recorder for around $1,300. So why spend that much today on a hard drive DVD recorder that's already obsolete? This is the product reviewer's dilemma. Do you judge something on its merits alone, or do you look at the big picture? If you'd struggle to find $1,300 today to buy this high-definition DVD recorder, you should save your money and buy a high-definition Blu-ray recorder in a year or so for the same price. If you've got $1,300 today to drop on this high-definition DVD recorder, perhaps you should dig a little deeper and buy the $2,200 Blu-ray recorder. Even then, I'd recommend waiting for Blu-ray recorder prices to drop and for them to include advanced features such as BD Live. So who should buy Panasonic's high-definition DVD recorder? No one. Does that mean I should give it 0 stars? No, that would imply it's a piece of junk, which it's not. It's just 3 years too late. If you want to buy Panasonic's high-definition DVD recorder, go right ahead. It's very good at what it does. Just don't complain when we see sub-$1,000 Blu-ray recorders by Christmas 2009. At least you're making an informed decision.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just buy yourself a set-top box with two digital TV tuners and a removable hard drive. That's all I reckon you need. But that's just me.
As soon as you buy technology, it's obsolete.
Yeah,
it's
been, your point?
They've already got something on the horizon which is going to replace what it is you've just purchased.
Yep, the next one will always be cheaper and bigger and better.
And do more things.
Except in Apple's case.
And be more up to date. So Adam said something along the lines of, why not wait until you can get a Blu-ray recorder in a year or so for the same price? Well, in a year or so, if you're prepared to wait for a year or so before you actually replace what you've got now, then that's a decision that you have to make.
Hmm.
If you're willing to spend $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 for equipment which may be out of date or superseded in 18 months' time, it's a decision you have to make.
Sony are just about to release their new range of Bravia television sets. Now, for my $3.50, they're probably one of the best on the market if you're looking to buy an LCD screen. And the new flavor comes out very shortly. Now, I did see it pass my screen the other day, and I couldn't get to it in time, but it looks fairly snazzy, the new Bravias. So,
now, back in the old days, in the days when I was learning about technology, Sony always made the best televisions and the best monitors because they had this patented picture tube technology that made the picture look really, really nice. I can't remember what it was called. It was called, yeah... It had a particular name.
Yeah, I'll think of it, but I know exactly what you mean.
Trinitron, yeah. That's the one. And their TVs always looked fantastic. And they weren't hideously expensive, like the big European ones that probably did look as good. But I wonder whether they've maintained that level of difference in the new LCD world, in the plasma world, and in the world of whatever's coming next.
Well, from what I've seen... yes, it's very impressive. It's by far the best HD stuff, full HD tuner that I've seen on the market.
Right.
Whether they're using different technology or different process, they've got motion flow and things like that, which are probably a little different to some of the other manufacturers and good refresh times and things. So, look, it's all possible. It's just a matter of what technology they're using to do it. But in the world of broadcast, it's still very much a Sony landscape. So.
Yeah,
Digital Betacam to HD cam, and the likes. Even the monitors are still, you know, very much Sony monitors, and we still use CRTs.
Mm. Adam's made a comment on the chat forum. Yes, Dr. On Bart, they've just released a product that is already out of date. It's the nature of the beast. It's the nature of the industry. The only thing that
what
gets
products
in,
is sorry, I'm
no, the DVD recorder that should have been on the market 3 years ago.
Years ago, it's just come out now. But yeah. I guess the only thing that we used to say in the software industry, the only thing that gets in the way of a good product is a great product. You have to draw a line in the sand. You have to say, this is going to be released now. It doesn't do everything we want it to do. There are new things on the horizon which are going to be available soon. This product doesn't do it. We know it doesn't do it. It's never going to do it, but we need to get it out the door. We need to get something out in the market. Otherwise, companies would just stay in development for 10 years forever, at a time, and nothing would ever come out.
Yep.
Rumor has it that the new Sony Bravias have web browsers built in.
That's interesting.
Oh, yes. That'd be very good. You can
web browsers or web servers?
Web browsers. So you plug your Cat5 in the back, gets an IP address off your thing, and you can surf the net with your own control.
I sort of subscribe to the Adam Turner camp where I think all these sorts of devices should come with web servers. So you put your Cat5 in the back, and yes, you can control it from a web browser, either internally in your house or from somewhere outside of your house or anywhere.
Well, Adam's doing lunch with Sony tomorrow, so expect a full report on next week's show. He might even come in and tell us about it on our 200 show or something like that. That'd be very nice, wouldn't it?
Adam, you know what we need in the next lot of Bravias? We need a Wi-Fi, we need a Cat5 port, and we need, or Cat6 or whatever the current technology is. We need a web server. We need a good interface, good user interface.
It's a bit hard, I reckon, putting a remote control web browser on the couch. That'd be a huge thing. You need a QWERTY keyboard on your web browser.
I reckon you could simplify
your remote.
You could simplify it. You could make it very easy to use. There needs to be a standard, doesn't there? Like a protocol, I guess, so devices can talk to each other for programming things.
Yeah, it's called
didn't
HTTP.
They try that?
HTTP. What's what they need, isn't it? They need a web server there.
Yeah.
Didn't a lot of manufacturers try that with those programmable remote controls where you had to key in a manufacturer's ID number and then that remote control would then talk to devices of that same manufacturer's ilk, whether it be a VHS machine or a DVD player or a DVD recorder?
I think they did. I never used one, but yeah, I think they did. Where did that go? Nowhere.
Don't know. It all got too hard. And I think that's the thing with consumers, isn't it? If it's not easy, well, then don't bother, because there's not the techno boffins in the world, like... If you had a media station in your living room, I would say that you would not be of the faint-hearted when it comes to brazenly taking on technology. Because I haven't seen, apart from one person's living room that I've been in, a media station.
It used to be the case that someone who had a network, a real proper computer network at home with a DHCP server to manage IP addresses and, gateway and all that sort of stuff... all that stuff that makes it easy, just plug a device in and it works on the network. That used to be very rare in people's homes. Now, it's in every home that's got broadband. Everyone's got a router. Every router does, DHCP, which means you plug a device in, it automatically gets connected to the network. So now's the time when these devices should be becoming more popular and accessible.
And more interconnected. You've got the technology, you've got the hard part of the technology is there.
Yeah.
We just need manufacturers like Sony to bring out consumer electronics, well, which are compatible.
Which you've got it,
this is what the Bravia will, on the new monitors, because it won't be just restricted to Sony. The Panasonics of the world will do it and all that very shortly too, and the LGs, I'm sure. It will enable you to bring to connect directly to a video streaming server, whether that be your favourite video library streaming server, if and when it becomes available, or to services like ABC's iView. So if you're a subscriber to one of the ISPs that actually give you free access to iView, the world is your oyster, my friends. You can sit down there and watch whatever you want.
You get free access to iView with your ISP?
Yes, I do.
So when I say free...
It's non-metered.
It's not metered.
Yeah.
So you could...
Everything comes at a price. There's nothing free these days.
That's true, but you could leave it running all day, every day, and it's not going to impact on your monthly download limit.
That's right.
That's pretty good.
That's right. And I think...
Most ISPs like that?
No. No, only a couple. And I guess iView's relatively new too.
Do you want to name the ISP? You're going to give them a free advertisement?
All right. iiNet.
iiNet.
Yes, iiNet. Okay. Give you free access to ABC's iView. Now, iView, for those of you listening, and I've gone, what on earth are you talking about? What it is you can now go and watch programs that have been to air on the ABC, again, stream directly to your PC, Apple Mac, or potentially Bravia of your choice very shortly.
Yep.
And the quality, everyone goes, oh, yeah, it looks terrible. The quality is, I would describe it as better than VHS and not quite up to DVD standard. But over a broadband feed of 140 to 250 odd megs of data, it's if you haven't seen it, it's very watchable and very easy to sit down and digest. It doesn't
skip a step. Lot better than a lot of online video. There's sure, it's a little bit blocky. It's not that much worse than Foxtel on its cheaper channels. And if you sit back a little bit from your computer screen, it's quite good, and the sound's good, and it's very reliable. But it only works if you've got one of the fastest broadband connections in Australia. You've got to have ADSL2 and it's got to be fast.
Adam Turner's on the chat room's also saying that iiNet also has non-metered iTunes for Australia and the United States.
Oh, is that what the other thing is? I keep seeing that come up, but now I know.
There you go.
See, when you're selecting an ISP these days, it's going to become tricky there too, isn't it? Because you want to be able to choose a provider that has your best interest at heart. So if you like watching ABC or you like downloading iTunes, look around and try and find, obviously, institutions that provide free streaming to that. Like I know Internode, for example, they have free zones for a lot of radio stations, so you can listen to audio whilst you work, whilst you play, whatever you do, you can stream, and it's not metered, not part of the metered traffic.
Mm. Interesting. So we're starting to have to look at what our intended usage is in terms of content. Before we select an ISP these days.
Yeah.
But that's the way it should be. It shouldn't be about bandwidth and money. It should be about what you're going to do with it. It's like when you go to a car, you buy a car. What are you going to do? Drive them down the streets at 100 kilometres an hour, or you want a family Funster? You choose the car which best suits your need. You choose the PC or Mac that best suits your application, don't you? So why shouldn't you?
You don't just go on bottom line and
Anyone who does that ends up getting bitten, if you ask me.
But that's bitten or bitter or both?
Both.
Yes.
Bitten and bitter.
Bitterly bitten.
Yes, we'll talk to Paris about that later. But anyway, let's move on, shall we? Excuse me, because we've got a rundown here. Let's go to item number 9, QuickTime 0-day spotted. Did anybody hear about this? QuickTime, which is part of the Mac operating system and is pretty much part of anything media, audio, visual.
It's Apple's video and audio player. It's on almost every PC as well as almost every Mac.
Yes. Well, as of the 19th of September, security experts were warning of a zero-day vulnerability. A zero-day is, we've found it now and it's happening right now as we speak.
Yeah, it means
sort of
that
thing.
The world found out the same time the developers did. The bad guys found out the same time the good guys did.
Anyway, there's a vulnerability that affects Apple's QuickTime and iTunes players, known as a boundary condition error. The flaw exists in the player's handling of header information for multimedia files. Now, the header file just traditionally tells us about ratios and sizes and what type of codecs have been used and all the sort of like the little handshaky bit that happens beforehand. So if someone puts some nasty information in there, which can happen, that's how they do it these days, they can take advantage of this flaw. An attacker could place a specially crafted bit of XML code in there with an audio or movie file that causes the application to crash. So, all sorts of funny things that people can do. But anyway, and that's the joys of today's modern computing world, really, isn't it? Regardless of what software you use, there's always a back door. Someone will find something the way in, an unlocked door somewhere, and they'll just muscle their way in. So if you're users of QuickTime, go and do an update. Yep. Telstra have announced prepaid wireless broadband.
Yeah, I saw this.
How about this?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
You wouldn't want to get to the last bit of your whatever you're downloading and da-da.
No, that's the thing. You'd be
yeah. It's the first company in Australia to do so, I might add. It's a big call. Telstra has taken another swipe at Optus, announcing that it's prepaid access to its Next G wireless broadband network, but Telstra's plans are more expensive than its rivals. Well, yes, Telstra's plans are always more expensive. Aimed at young people, frequent travellers and personal users, Telstra hopes to capitalise on the range of its Next G services and the popularity of prepaid accounts with young people.
Yep.
Generation Y just cannot budget. It's a known fact. So... And the other thing, too, is that probably Telstra will be next offering 4 years interest-free on a broadband account. You can sign up with one of those GE insurance people or something like that. But anyway, no, we'll stop poking fun at those. But, yes, it puts Telstra in direct competition against Optus, which launched a prepaid wireless broadband service earlier this year. Customers will be able to buy $149 prepaid wireless broadband, and which contains a USB modem, a Telstra Next G SIM card, and a $10 startup credit. The modems are preloaded with self-installing software that runs on Windows XP, Vista 2000, and the good old OS X.
Mm.
So there you go, rocking in $149. Yeah. How much does that get? 6 gig? No. Yeah. Anyway. it's good, huh?
Not for me. Prepaid's not for me, but it's personal preference, isn't it?
It deals with the bill shock problem, doesn't it? You're not going to...
Because it's been paid, you know,
that's right.
What it is you've purchased.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yes, it's not our target market. It's for the younger people. It's like those people who like prepaid mobiles for their texting so that they don't get cut off.
Yeah, it depends on what you use your broadband for. If it's more important to you to be able to budget correctly and not have an unexpectedly massive bill, and that's more important than having a connection that's definitely going to work, then this might be for you. If you need it always to work and you know you can't put up with it not working because you've run out of credit, then you need the postpaid service. So
agreed.
Yeah, horses for courses.
Also, while we're talking about Telstra and Optus, Telstra got stuck in Optus for cancelling their Fusion wireless broadband packages.
Oh.
Telstra slammed Optus as a disaster. Well, why wouldn't you? I wonder what Phil's left now. I wonder who's making up these words for them.
Mm.
But, yes, Telstra slammed Optus as a disaster after Australia's number two carrier cancelled its popular Fusion wireless broadband service. And apparently, according to IT News, Optus made the decision to suspend the sale of the Fusion product to ensure that they deliver an experience to their customers using the product. Optimum experience. I don't know how that means. Does that mean the network was getting congested and they had to stop selling it in order to maintain the quality of service?
You'd wonder, wouldn't you? What's Fusion? Excuse my ignorance.
It's mobile broadband, or it's like Next G.
It's their product name.
Yeah, it's their product name for wireless broadband.
Right.
The Fusion service, part of Optus's 3G wireless network, was reportedly clogged by new iPhone users, causing traffic to slow down long queue. So basically,
yeah, got the tubes clogged.
3G clagged down to 1G, and everyone said, "Why did we bother with this?" So they've stopped selling. Read between the lines, they've stopped selling it now, so that it might escalate back up to 3G. Because that's the thing, isn't it? You can have a lot of access points, but if your network can't handle the speeds, then what's the point?
Yeah.
So, and I suspect that's potentially what Telstra are having a go at them about too. Just as an
aside, it's David Kilty Telstra's Group Managing Director of Public Policy and Communications.
Oh, there you go.
Now that Uncle Phil's moved on.
Yeah.
I was listening to the last podcast of Uncle Phil's the other day. We're talking about Phil Burgess, who used to be the bull terrier for Telstra. Maybe you could work for Microsoft.
Telstra Soft. Yeah.
But it was quite interesting. Spin aside, he had some very interesting points to make about the state of telecommunications and in this country compared to other parts of the world. And he was saying that, yes, we do have it pretty good over here. Now, I can concur with what he was saying. One of the arguments that he had was that, you know, when he's back at home in his hometown in Florida, that he can move a few metres with his cell phone over there and it drops out, whereas we don't have those dilemmas over here.
Mm.
And Lydia's saying the same thing. She lives in the heart of technology in Silicon Valley where the unemployment rate is rampant. And she just says that, yeah, you can move 2 feet and the call will just drop out. And it's just very frustrating compared to what you have over here.
Happens here, though. Happens here.
Yeah, but not to the level that they talk about over there.
Mm.
And, of course, you've got all the different carriers too over there, but who knows whether they all talk like they do here. Another aviation thing too, because Mark's not here tonight.
Yeah.
A pilot has made a historic night landing in Antarctica. How about that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Heard about this. Using night vision goggles.
Using his goggles.
I think GD actually emailed us about this.
Oh, yeah. Is that what it could have been? Yeah. GD, one of our regular listeners.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yes, it's pretty interesting sort of part of the world down there, Antarctica, because it's either day for a long period of time or it's night for a long period of time, isn't it? So when you hit the nighttime thing, you want to get supplies in there. You want to do a bit of a landing, I guess, with your night goggles on.
We're coming round to the all-day time of year for Antarctica, wouldn't it, at the moment?
Antarctica. Is that Arctic's north and Antarctic is south, isn't it?
Yes. Down the bottom, yeah. Yeah. So, we're coming into summer.
It'd be daylight.
Yeah, so, the sun will be coming up down there now, yeah.
Mm.
A pilot has successfully landed an aircraft in Antarctica using night vision goggles, a feat hailed as a historic one, which could lead to year-round flights to the frozen continent. I wonder what type of aircraft it was. I'm going to read on it. Probably tell me.
The one pilot of the new A380s. No, maybe
I doubt
not
it very much.
Based on
there's no trees to hit down there. No. You've got a mountain, I guess.
So I reckon it'd be very scary.
It would be very scary.
You'd probably slide a fair way with a bit of momentum like that, I would imagine.
That'd be the worry, wouldn't it?
Yeah, quick, we're running out of Antarctica. We've got 100 miles to go. Stop us.
Okay.
Reverse thrusters. No, apparently it was a US Air Force Globemaster. Whatever that is.
Oh,
it must be like a Hercules or something along those lines. It flew from Christchurch in New Zealand to the US Antarctic base at McMurdo Sound and managed to land with its night goggles, which is very impressive, really. I wonder how I'm no expert on that. Whether there's something like radioactive involved in those little guys, but
In the night vision
goggles?
Yeah,
night vision. They're full of
nasty, nasty stuff. You don't want them to break.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Especially not
I've heard that sort of stuff.
Radioactive gunk into your eyes. Never buy second-hand night vision goggles. If you're going to use them and you need them, then spend the money.
There's a tip. I'll go and have a look on eBay, amongst other things that we want to look for. But, yeah, I thought that was quite an achievement in aviation if it's never been done before.
I'd imagine you'd only need them for the last very short part of the approach to the landing and then the landing itself, because you'd be using the instrumentation in the aircraft for most of the...
Yeah, you'd want to just make sure there isn't a big bump or something, or an Eskimo or an igloo or whatever, a seal.
I don't think there's any Eskimo in Antarctica, actually. They're
wrong hemisphere.
That's all right.
Some sort of a large penguin, I think, is probably your worst fear.
Polar bear, maybe?
No, again, other end of the world.
The other thing with night vision goggles...
Been separated from the main world for a long period of time. Sorry, go on, Dr. Ron.
The other thing with night vision goggles is you get very, very motion sick.
Really?
They're horrible if you've got them on for a long period of time.
Why is that? Because everything goes green and you get no perspective of colour or something? Just, or just it's like lag when you look at an LCD monitor, it lags.
It's a bit like lag and you don't have any peripheral vision because your eyes
vision,
are covered and you're relying on digital images to steer you, I suppose.
Which don't quite perhaps match with the other sensations.
With the other senses, yeah.
Now, I've just done a bit of a search. You're asking about what sort of a plane this was. Now, there's various different types of Globemaster, but the one I hit on the site I was searching before says it's about as heavy as the maximum takeoff weight is, about half as heavy as the A380.
That's still a lot of mass.
It's still a big plane.
1,000 kilograms.
You have to be a very skilled pilot to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the terrain and the weather conditions must have been spot on. Very tricky landing down there in a blizzard or something. All right, I've now officially lost my rundown, so we'll take a break and we'll come back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
We're trying to eat scones and jam and cream in here.
It was very quick,
and,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very quick. Suddenly we're back on the wireless.
When I put that one together, I knew that would catch me. Hello, welcome back to TikTok Radio.
No one
everybody.
To blame but yourself.
Absolutely.
Did you get a scone, Graham?
Yeah. I've never seen three people jump so quickly in a radio studio before. very good evening to you all. Come along and enjoy the fun. We're all online at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Wherever you might be listening to us, around Australia, around the world, for that matter. Okay. Darren's disappeared. We have a UK listener who comes in regularly, contributes, but it's middle of the day over there. I think he's got to go and do some work.
Gone to lunch, 12:30.
Yeah, he's missing out on the scones with the hairs in them.
Come on now. That was...
How's the pooch, by the way?
Did she miss you while you were away? Yes, she did. A little test.
Oh, good. Bill Gates has managed to get his way back up on the rich list again. He fell off for a while, and he's back this year.
Microsoft did he give away too much?
Well, he's big on philanthropy, all jokes aside, he does he's got so much, he's got to give some of it away, really, doesn't he? But and his wife, Melinda?
Melinda,
that's right, Melinda. Yeah, she's one of the big people behind the foundation.
I think they're both very, very keen on it to give them their job.
I think so. All things aside, he's done amazing things there. Microsoft founder Bill Gates has recovered his spot at the top of the US money heap, displacing investor Warren Buffett as America's richest person. That's this week. We'll see what happens with the shares in the US stock market. And it depends which bank he's got his money in, really, doesn't it? So, because three of the five top banks in the US have gone south? That's a lot. That's a lot. And there's, two to go or something? Anyway, we're not a banking show. We don't have financial advisors.
No, I haven't been following that closely. People have been a bit worried about it.
They did something very interesting here today.
What did they do here?
In the stock market? We're turning into a stock show now.
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
okay, off you go then.
Stock market and financial advice with TikTok Radio. The government has put a ban on what they call short selling on the market for 30 days. So they've told stockbrokers...
Basically the punters, you can't punt anymore.
That's right.
You've got to have long-term 30 days. That must be an eternity for some stockbrokers, I would have thought.
But they've done that to try and stabilise things here, to try and ride out what's happening in the US. Yeah, it is gambling. The way it was explained to me is that if you borrow someone's stocks or you have control of someone's stocks and you do a big sell to try and force the price of the stock down, when the price of the stock goes down, you buy them back again. You pocket the money you've made and you can return the stocks to the people that you're managing them for. But if it doesn't work...
It's effectively selling stock you don't earn based on the fact that the price is going to go down by the time you own them.
That's right.
It's like what hedge funds do. They do exactly that.
Mm.
But this is not a show about that.
Oh, no. No. It's interesting. But the government here said, no one can do that in Australia now on the ASX.
Not for a while.
They'll
review that.
They'll review it in 30 days, I think they said.
The Large Hadron Collider has broken.
Yeah.
Did you know? And someone hacked into it. Apparently they've done the power supply.
Now, I had some notes here from last week. We didn't get around to everything we had on our plan for last week. That's okay. Hackers fool the Hadron Collider computers. And then...
This is the doomsday device that, for those who don't know what we're talking
still
about.
We're still here.
Well, of course we're still here. All they did was send some beams around it. They didn't collide anything. It's when they start colliding things that the world's going to end.
Oh, okay. No, it was just a joyride, was it, the other day?
Yeah, they sent some beams around, but they didn't have any collisions.
If the world's going to end, it would have already ended.
Nonsense.
It's nonsense. This is all nonsense. You reckon they're going to make a little black hole that's going to devour the Earth and
they don't quite know what they're going to make, and it's a little bit scary.
And let's settle down. There's religions that have fallen apart because of the theories that you're now bouncing around the Tech Talk Radio studios.
Andrew, what's happened? For better or worse, the thing's broken.
Absolutely. The world's largest particle collider will be down for 2 months as a section will have to be repaired because of a fault. And the incident was... Oh, it's right here in front of me. I'm sure it was a power supply related incident. Apparently, they took out half the grid or something when they turned it on the other day.
Half the grid?
Bit of a surge.
Taken out half of Europe, I think.
Well, yes, yes. But someone's managed to hack it. Maybe that's what took the power supply out. They put in a big, fired it up when they shouldn't have or something.
A group calling itself the Greek Security Team left a rogue web page mocking the technicians responsible for computer security at the giant Atom Smasher. They mocked the technicians as school kids, according to the Times and Daily Telegraph last week.
Oh, no. They are.
Not stereotypes wearing glasses and ill-fitting suits.
And lab coats, yeah.
we've got our own particle accelerator here just down the road from us, actually, from the broadcasting studio, probably not more than 10 kilometres away from us.
Which one's that?
The one down at the big thingy down...
The synchrotron. Down where Telstra's or Telecom's research used to be.
Yeah, in Clayton.
Down near Monash.
Anyway, that's still going. No one's, battered an eyelid over that. Apparently, the reason why it was shut down was because the cooling system, the air conditioning, failed. So the little men in white coats were getting a bit hot, so they had to take a week or so to fix that before we can get back in and play with our collider. So, yes. Also, other interesting news. IEEE, those guys, the big, a convention of white coats that... assign standards to everything.
Oh, yes.
They're considering gigabit Wi-Fi by 2012.
Gigabit Wi-Fi by 2012. It's going to be a lot happening in 2012.
802.11z.
Is that the new name for it?
No, but you fell for it.
Was it
802.11n is the best we've got at the moment.
Yeah.
We'll get up to Z shortly, I reckon. We'll have N-O-P-Q-R-S-T.
Are we going to have any bandwidth left for anything else?
No.
Well, it'll be a free-for-all, I reckon, above 5 gig very shortly. Mm. 5 gigahertz being the frequency that 802.11n tends to operate on. And there's plenty of spectrum up around 10 gig. It'll just be like mobile phone, fry your brain stuff. You run more power up there, you can cook your veggies while you're surfing the net.
Yeah, the higher you go, the less likely you are to go through the walls, though.
That's very true. Mm. That's why NextG's come back down to 850 meg.
Yes.
So it does go through the walls. It does get in, like liquid into this chalk.
Did you ever... That's a very old reference to a very old television commercial.
That's a very old radio host. Yeah.
Am I showing my age now?
Ooh, it does get in. Now, did you ever get your wireless network working at your office?
I was going to ask you. Spasmodically. Depends which train's going past.
Yeah, because you had a problem with interference from the nearby railway line, you thought at the time.
I still definitely think it's that because it can take out the whole part of our area. All of a sudden, you can see 10 wireless networks, and all of a sudden, you can see... only the one that's very close to your device but that you're watching.
Is it as predictable as the fault occurring when a train goes past?
No, it's down for hours and then it comes back.
Oh, that's weird.
So, and the only thing that everyone's put it down to is that there's a very big railway. Most of Melbourne's trains go past our office fairly quickly, relatively speaking.
Mm, you wonder why it's spasmodic then. The other thing that can cause trouble on networks like that is some of these new wireless router devices that have very high bandwidth, that they advertise, up to, some ridiculously high bandwidth, even though it's only 802.11g or something. The way they do it is by using multiple channels at once. So you might set up a connection between the wireless access point and the computer on three different channels all at the same time and get the speed to run very fast. And, of course, that works really well for you, but it blots out everybody else who might be nearby on adjacent channels. So that's the other possibility, is that someone in your building or next door or something is running one of those nasty devices and blotting out the area.
Well, that's a possibility. And video thingies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Foxtel enabling all four of its IQ2 tuners. There's a tongue twister, isn't it?
Mm.
Adam's probably the man to speak to here because I wouldn't have Foxtel. I haven't had Foxtel for a long time.
Now, the IQ2.
I didn't know it had four.
Video recorder that comes that you can get as an option with your Foxtel pay television service.
But with four tuners, for goodness sakes, how many things do you want to record at the one time?
Well, if you've got, a couple of 100-odd channels, then, there might be things on, half a dozen different channels you want to watch at once. I don't know.
My question would be, how many outputs does it have? Can you have it central to your whole house?
I wouldn't think so.
No? They're not big on that?
Someone can tell us on the chat, I'm sure.
They're very not big on that at Foxtel. Yes, they really don't like you connecting more than one screen to the same receiver.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You could have the receiver, you could have your lounge room telly, and then use another receiver for a telly in your bedroom.
That's right.
And then one for in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But they don't like that.
No, they do. They want you to have a separate receiver for each location.
Foxtel.
And charge you more.
Does not play well with others.
Now, just before you go and turn your IQ2 on and see if you've got four tuners working, apparently they're rolling it out successively. So you might have three, and then one day you might have four. But Anyway.
So you can record three programs while you're watching another one.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So, other interesting things too. Qantas, we spoke about at the beginning of the program.
Yep.
Abandons its in-flight internet. Did you know?
Aww.
What's the logic behind Qantas abandoning plans to offer internet access on its A380 services? Well, apparently, concerns over porn, technical incompetence, and fear of more bad press. Not necessarily, not necessarily in any three of those orders. Qantas's first A380 flight from Melbourne to Los Angeles is due to take off in just over a month, but plans to offer internet access on the much-hyped Airbus plans have been grounded at the last minute. Having already delayed announcing pricing for the service earlier this year, Qantas has now delayed offering full internet access on its planes until early 2009. The Sydney Morning Herald reported that instead of full access, customers will be offered a cached internet service. Think about that. Where are they going to cache that?
On a very big hard disk.
Yes.
Ladies anyway. And gentlemen, there'll be a short delay before we take off while we copy the internet to our hard disks.
They'd probably just crawl the common news sites, I'm guessing.
Probably. Yes.
Anyway.
Popular websites, they cache them all. Yeah, before they took off.
Won't do you much good if you want to read your email, will it?
No, it won't do you any good at all.
No.
That's garbage.
It is. It is. I guess it stops the guy next to you watching porn on the internet whilst the family's flying next to you in business. I don't know. That's one of their concerns, believe it or not.
But can't they trust their passengers to have an element of common sense? Like, you wouldn't any more do that like on a crowded train than you would on an aeroplane.
Yes. What's to stop them opening a printed porn magazine on the seat beside you while your family is on the plane? There's no
correct.
Difference. Yes.
Just doesn't glow, does it?
Doesn't glow.
It's reflective as opposed to a light emitting. That's the only difference.
That's bizarre. Must be another reason. Because that would be a big money spinner. It would have the potential to be a big money spinner for Qantas, I would have thought.
Yes, but they're more afraid of the bad publicity these days.
Oh, yeah, they can just...
Well, that Qantas is, isn't it?
They can have a wheel problem on the galley trolley and it'll make the mainstream media these days. Anyone else can crash and I don't care, but no. Poor Qantas.
No.
Tall poppy.
One word for Qantas. Wuss.
No. Go, Jeff. He's been a good CEO. Hey, what's a prime number? Do you know?
It's a number that can only be divided by itself and one.
Such as?
Two.
Well done.
Well, would you believe that scientists have now found the world's largest prime numbers?
Oh, yes. You worried me. I thought you were going to say they found the world's largest prime number. I thought you were having a go at me again.
Another
trying
moment?
To suck me in.
No. This is just little white men, as Richard Stubbs calls them, Oompa Loompas, with too much spare time on their hands.
Little Oompa Loompas.
They go and write little programs.
Too much computing power.
That's it. Wait till you hear our gadget of the week. But yes, too much computing power means that they work out prime numbers because forget black holes, forget large colliders in Switzerland or anything like that. Let's get back to basics and work out primes. Scientists in the US and Germany have found that the two largest prime numbers ever calculated in a discovery which could dramatically increase the effectiveness of there's a word that you don't come across every day, cryptographic systems.
Right.
Go Eugene.
Yep.
The two numbers were discovered within a fortnight of each other by the Great Internet Mersenne Prime Search Project, which has spent 12 years looking for them.
But I still don't understand. What numbers have they found?
They found two large prime numbers.
Right.
Larger than any found before.
Larger than any found before.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's taken them 12 years to find it.
Right.
And do you want to know the numbers? We'll be here a while.
how many digits do they have?
The largest prime number, which was a whopping 12,978,189 digits, was discovered by a team from UCLA. And the second, discovered by a computer user in Germany, has 11,185,272 digits.
That's not the actual number. That's the number of digits that the number has.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd take a long time. You divide it by three. No, divide it by four. No, divide by five. Oh, yeah, you can. Oh, I'll start again. Try next one.
Yes, so it's an interesting area of mathematics to work out how to find them without having to go through that whole process, because obviously that would take forever.
But it's good, I think. I'm glad people are spending time on that. It means we can have a little bit better than 256, whatever it is,
yes,
protection
keys.
Yes, it
sounds like an obscure
like
mathematical
that.
Problem, but it does help with our security, yes.
So it'll be all good and fun.
Is it true that the SETI people... When they're searching for their
extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yeah, and they're beaming signals and things out into space at galaxies that they think might have intelligent life in them.
And boldly they seem, split infinitives that no man has split before.
Correct.
Douglas Adams, and rest in peace.
And they send streams of recurring streams of prime numbers.
Prime numbers, yes.
Because prime numbers don't naturally occur.
Dr. Ron, you're a wealth of information.
In nature.
Mathematical intelligence, yes.
That's right. It's not going
to... It's not cyclical.
And it doesn't require language to be able to communicate it.
That's right.
It in pulses. Yeah.
But no matter what language you speak or what race you are and what side of the universe you're on, if you see... It, as Graham said, it assumes a certain level of mathematical understanding.
Yeah. If you send a group of pulses in 2, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, 19 groups...
And then repeat that
yes,
over and over.
Then people will catch on that, yeah, maybe you've got a bit of intelligence to be able to do that.
Hmm.
So where would the 1956 Olympics be at the moment? How far away from the planet Earth at 300 kilometres per second or whatever
it is? Not that far. That's the problem.
That's the thing, isn't it?
These schemes is that they only travel at the speed of light.
The big picture, it's just down the road, really, isn't it? It hasn't even got to the freeway yet.
No.
And that's right. The first television images that people saw, another type of intelligence actually intercepts, if they do intercept our television signals from Earth, is going to be Adolf Hitler opening the Olympic Games in 1956.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, heaven help us.
Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely.
Only 50 years ago. 52 years ago.
Yep, and it's only 50 light years away now.
That's right.
Hmm.
Another interesting thing which came up in the news this week is, especially, I think it was in London. Our London correspondent has... Oh, no, he's back. Darren's back.
Hey, Darren.
Chat at techtalkradio.com.au. You come and have a chat to Darren.
How was lunch? Let us know.
Apparently, London cabbies. Should I say the London cabbies benefit from over 60,000 devices, like handheld devices, phones and PDAs and stuff like that, being left in the back of London cabs during the past 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of PDAs to lose, isn't it? 60,000 in the back of a cab.
Wonder what proportion got returned to their rightful owner.
Don't know. Some 55,843 mobile phones and 619 other devices, such as laptops, were forgotten. How can you forget a laptop in the back of a cab? Like, they're fairly big.
As soon as the cab drives off, mobile phone. You'd remember.
Yes.
Anyway, new devices, including mobiles, MP3 players and memory sticks, have the capacity to store tens of thousands of documents and pictures and millions of contacts and emails, making them a target for identity theft. It's a big, big issue that's coming up. So don't leave your things lying in the back of a cab or on a train or a tram or a bus, wherever you might happen to be, because I reckon... I don't know. What would lost property be like on a generic railway system in Sydney, Brisbane, or Melbourne? Like, would they find lots of things like that, or would they probably never make it to a lost property section? Would they?
I think there'd be a fair proportion of both, but this goes especially to people from government, from large businesses and banks and major companies to make sure that if you work for one of those companies, not to leave your company laptop behind either, because you can have a massive impact on your customers' security that way as well.
Mm.
1936. Sorry, the Olympic Games. Yeah, thanks, Adam, on the chat room there. Not 1956. Yeah, that was.
What are we talking about?
1956 was Melbourne.
1956, the Melbourne Games. But you're talking about the World War II Olympics back in 36.
We got confused.
Yes. Oh, we turned them around.
We had Olympic Games here in 56. That's right. Yeah, Hitler was fairly quiet after World War II. Adam says he's quite correct. not a historian by any means, but
so no, stick to the technology, son. You'll be right.
Stick to what I know.
Absolutely. merged banks' names are becoming fairly big for cyber squatters. Like, you know, pick two banks, like Commonwealth Bank, National Australia Bank, join them together, and all that. Acronyms there, not so much in our country, but in other countries like in the United States at the moment, a lot of banks are actually surviving by taking each other over and merging.
Mm.
And as a result, if you want to get out there and register a domain name, which is acronyms of two banks, you become a cyber squatter of that. That's a bit advantageous, really, isn't it, of the global credit crisis that currently besets us?
Yes. Big bank under receivership.com.
Oh, we do. We are jovial tonight, aren't we? What about telcos? We could merge some telcos. Merge Telstra and Optus, Telstra and Vodafone.
Let's
do
not.
All sorts of things. No, okay, sorry.
Singtel and Telstra. Singstra.
Whilst we're in the land of the United States, the big bald eagle, there's a political event scheduled to happen in the not-too-distant future called an election, presidential election. One of the candidates...
Called an election.
Yes. One of the candidates... had her email hack attacked. Whoops.
Yes.
Now, allegedly, the FBI are tracking down the perpetrators, but...
And the Secret Service have launched an investigation.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, apparently.
Well, I'm sure they'll be right onto it.
They will.
So what would ever... Obviously, she had a really bad password. We should speculate as to what that password could have been.
No, the story I heard was that they actually managed to convince Yahoo to reset her password by impersonating her. So
Went
through the password recovery...
Identity theft.
Yeah. So they went into the password recovery section of Yahoo and said, who are you? I'm Sarah Palin, and what's your birthday? And it's this because it's on public record. And what's your mother's maiden name? And it's this because it's on public record. And yeah, managed to get through it.
Wow. See, there you go. Don't give your date of birth to anyone.
This is why it's important to protect your personal information.
Much less the American public.
Yeah. It's quite. Yes. So having then reset the password to the account, they've been able to log in quite easily and access all her information.
Yep. Send emails as her and yes.
The chat's going flat out, talking about acronyms of joining things together at the moment. Well done, boys. comgeorge.com. Optus? Tell us.
Opstra.
Tell us.
Opstra. Tell us, yes.
There was actually a bit of a conspiracy theory as well about the Sarah Palin email situation.
Was there?
Really?
Email gate.
Do tell. I love a good conspiracy theory.
Well they're saying, why would she have anything other than private email in a Yahoo account? Why has she got information pertaining to the running for the vice presidency and that type of emails of that type? And some people were saying, well, maybe it's because if she's using official email, then that's subject to oversight and disclosure.
Absolutely, but yes. Freedom of information and all that sort of stuff.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Still a little bit careless to be using Yahoo Mail for government business, I would have thought.
I wouldn't be doing that personally. But she gets paid a lot more money than I do. I'm sure she knows what she's doing.
I wouldn't be using Yahoo Mail or any third-party sort of Gmail. Trusted...
No. It's just, Microsoft Mail. No, that's a mail client. What's the Microsoft one?
MSN.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, Hotmail.
Hotmail.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, you might as well store your personal details in your social networking site, shouldn't you? Pretty much all the same. Speaking of Microsoft, they've devised a new technology, which they've unveiled, called BlueTrack. Have you heard of BlueTrack?
No.
BlueTrack, excuse me, Microsoft has unveiled a new peripheral system that's said to work on nearly all surfaces. The company claims that its new BlueTrack mice and keyboards are more versatile, accurate, and rugged than the current generation of laser-guided peripherals. Yeah. The heart of the new system, said Microsoft, is the use of a larger beam and an updated optical system. Probably gone on the Blu-ray side of things because everyone's gone from red to blue. It's trendy, isn't it? Mm. The blue beam is said to have some four times larger tracking system than the current laser system, and this allows BlueTrack mouse to work on surfaces such as carpet. And I don't know why you'd want to use them. Well, I guess you do want to use a mouse on carpet if you're lying on the floor using your media center.
Well, I do.
There is a problem with some of the current mice, with the optical mice on some surfaces.
Reflective surfaces have always been...
Reflective surfaces are a problem, but also surfaces that are woven with a particular weave pitch that just happens to match the sensor pitch. And also
what do you mean
on
pitch? What do you mean
like
pitch?
The distance between the threads.
It's very technical.
I'm just trying to picture this in my mind. Are you telling me that there's the gap between the threads and the carpet is the same, pitch
like
as your laser?
If you imagine a mouse mat that's got a cloth cover, and you do see them around, if the weave of that just happens to be close to the distance between the sensor lines that the mouse looks at to tell where it is, then that's going to confuse the mouse. The same can happen with some kinds of printing processes that use, dots a certain distance apart.
You learn everything on this program,
don't you?
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
So they reckon that the BlueTrack is going to alleviate some of those problems for those people
who
don't want carpet burns.
Personally, I've always found for optical mice that a plain sheet of white paper has always been the best mousing surface because it's sufficiently random in texture that the mouse can find itself all the time.
Am I the only person that hates mouse pads?
No,
I hate them. I cannot use them. If I sit down at work and there's a mouse pad there, I pick it up and I throw it behind the computer.
I use a tablet and a pen. I don't.
Yeah,
I
you don't use you don't, use, don't mouses use at all.
Mice. I don't use rodents of any kind unless I'm forced to.
You've got a
well, it's just natural.
You use a Wacom brand, don't you?
I do, but it's just natural. Like if you pick a piece of paper up, you pick a pen up, and you write on it. Why do we have to have a mouse, a device which is really associated only with a computing device to navigate around a desktop? Why wouldn't you just use your finger to point at it and stuff like that? Like you use them in PDAs.
Yeah, true. I use a stylus when I'm writing on a PDA.
You look at the
yeah.
new Apple range of products and all the other, you know, pinches and flicks and touches, and we're back to using...
Being very tactile rather
using
than...
Using the pointer that we have on the end of our hand, the called a finger, to navigate our way around these sort of devices. But yes, I find a rodent. The only good thing about a rodent is the wheel. I like the wheel.
Do you use a wheel? A little scrolly wheel. I do, very much so.
That's
very much so.
Very handy when you want to get to the bottom of a page very quickly. You get a bit of a zing and down you go.
The other thing I love is that is holding control down on a PC and using the little wheel to change the font size of the text you're looking at on the screen if it's for some reason too small or too large.
Interesting.
It's a very, very quick way just to increase or decrease the size of the font.
Just completely off topic. Have you ever discovered shortcuts for computers when you've just...
Keyboard shortcuts?
Yeah, when you accidentally key the wrong thing, you go, wow, how did I do
know,
that?
I didn't know that.
No, I discovered one the other day. I can't exactly remember. It just popped into my mind just then, but I was thinking, oh, I never knew that. If you know, you hold the combination of Control, Shift, and Alt down at the same time as you click on something, something bizarre happens.
What's your favourite keyboard shortcut?
Control Z.
Control Z for undo. For undo.
It works on nearly every
Windows
application.
Windows E to open up Explorer.
Damn, that's what I was going to say. Windows E for opening up Windows Explorer. What's Windows Explorer?
Windows Explorer is the file manager in Windows.
Oh, I don't use that.
Which shows you what's on your disks and drives and USB
things
and everything
else.
That's
a good question, actually. Do you use that religiously? Because I use a program called Total Commander. Which is like X-Tree Gold from the old good old days of computing for
moving
files.
I make a point of always using the built-in tools because I do a lot of work on other people's computers, and I, you know, if I got to be reliant on something like Total Commander, then I would find myself crippled if I had to work on some customer server that didn't have it installed. So
just take
it
on your stick.
No. You when you're doing that sort of work, you learn how to do things with what you've got, and it's a much safer way to go. You don't have to install things on clients' computers. You don't have to mess around, and you can do stuff with what you've got.
Warlock says Windows L is handy. I agree. Walking away from your computer, Windows L.
Yes.
Oh, that puts in the lock, doesn't it?
Locks it.
It does.
Locks it. I used to go Control Alt Delete Enter. That used to be a very fast way of locking. And then I think Graham showed me. Just do Windows L. It's half the number of keystrokes to lock a computer.
And I must admit, because of habit, I still do Control Alt Delete Enter.
Do you really? There you go. Now, JD's come out with all these Apple ones. I don't know what any of those mean. Apple C, Apple X.
Keys on their keyboard I don't even know how to say. Like a thing with all the four loops in the corners. What on earth is that?
I don't know. That's the thing with four loops in the corner.
Control, open, Apple, reset or something. Yeah.
Good grief.
Look, chat.tech, you can continue this live online with everyone now. We're going to go for a break, but chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Pass the scones, please, Dr. Ron.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
I understand.
Give fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers per second was good.
That you're not expecting, even if they do a thing like
that. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my
And this week's is for those whose computer is always just that little bit too slow, and doesn't that apply to all of us?
Yeah, it does.
Microsoft and Cray of supercomputer fame have...
At last, something that'll run Vista!
Yes, it might be fast enough to run Vista. It's Cray's first Windows-based supercomputer. It's a 64-core data center.
Is that all?
64-core, yes.
It's Xeon processors, isn't it, I think I read?
Yep, 16 Xeon processors, either dual or quad-core, which makes a total of up to 64, if that adds up. 8 supercomputing nodes that can accommodate up to 64 gigabytes of memory. This is obviously going to run significantly faster than your Pentium 4. It's called the Cray CX1.
Is anything like the Crays of yesteryear when we all...
Well, it's the same.
It's the same company,
yeah. Collaborating with Microsoft this time. Of course, the Crays in the old days always used to run Unix operating systems.
So how come they've gone to Microsoft?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps they want to get into a different area of the market.
Seriously, runs, they needed something to run Vista, surely.
Runs a special new version of Windows, Windows HPC Server 2008. And, it's competitively and inexpensively priced at around $25,000.
Oh, good. Let's get one for Christmas, ain't you? Put it in the whisk. Yeah, good.
Cheap at half the price.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
I've got a website for you this week. The boys, one of the boys of Google fame, Sergey, however you'd like to pronounce it.
Yep.
Is blogging. Sergey Brin. He's one of the co-founders of Google, to be precise, and he's decided to start his own blog, which is of non-Google related things. So, once again, you know, expressing his personal side of things. And at the moment, he's been talking about Parkinson's disease on his own blog. Now, you can visit his blog, and it's not a technical blog. It's just a blog about, you know, place to go and put your thoughts and your memoirs and all sorts of things like that. And, I think the thought is just quite good that, you know, puts a bit of a human face behind the engineers or the startup types that got Google going. So if you visit two, as in too.blogspot.com, you'll find Sergey's blog there. And you can read a little bit about some of his personal and private life and stuff like that. So there you go. A bit of an insight into those behind Google.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Short time. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
German police are unable to decipher the encryption used in the internet telephone software Skype to monitor calls by suspected criminals and terrorists, according to Germany's top police officer.
Well, they're using Skype now, are they?
Skype allows users to make telephone calls over the internet from their computer to other Skype users free of charge, but law enforcement agencies and intelligence services who have used wiretaps since the telephone was invented are unable now to intercept telecommunications. But they've over Skype.
They've had that same problem with mobile communications. Next year, that's all encrypted and digital phones.
The president of Germany's federal police office said the encryption with Skype telephone software creates grave difficulties for us. We can't decipher it. That's why we're talking about source telecommunications surveillance. That is, getting to the source before encryption or after it's been decrypted.
So you're going to get to the source, encode
this
it.
This always confused me, because we had this problem when the first version of, or when GSM networks were introduced in Australia from analog, and the rollout was delayed, and it was delayed, and it was delayed. It's because the security services here said, we're having trouble breaking the
being able
to monitor it. And I always thought, well, why would you be monitoring it off air anyway? It doesn't seem to me to be a sensible place to be.
Well, you can't actually put your little bug in between the microphone and the PC, can you?
Well, wouldn't you be going into the network if you're doing it lawfully and you've got a warrant that's issued by a court to actually intercept communications? Why wouldn't you be doing it inside the network? So it always seems strange to me. But
gentlemen, we'll come back and do it again next week, shall we?
Yeah,
right. Episode 199 next
week.
Yeah,
all right.
We might even get the webcam out very shortly for those.
Oh, stop making threats. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll put threats like it's coming. All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's been fun. Come and join us on the chat next week. We've had a lot of fun there tonight. chat.techtalkradio.com.au when we're live to air, which is Monday nights, 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. We're probably going to Daylight Saving shortly too, but that's another story.
We will.
Okay,
we will.
Until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panelists, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.